Hey everyone. I
Hello.
think more
Yeah.
will be joining us. But while we wait, is there anyone who can take notes today?
I can take notes. This is Lola.
Awesome. Thank you, Lola.
Sure.
And so our agenda's pretty straightforward for today. So I've noticed that we haven't had many people adding up votes to our draft users features in the gap list. And so I thought today we could go through a few of these tickets, and if it's something that your institution would be interested in. While we're in this meeting, if you could add your vote to it, that would be great. And then we can start digging into these in more depth once we've got some priorities sorted. Oh, yes, Ushi.
No, it's I think it's fine. Well, I had no possibility to talk to my colleagues as both of them were either ill or in holidays or had no times. So our votes are missing.
Okay. Yeah, I think I haven't seen many votes from folks, so I think a lot of people are probably in the same place. Can you all see me sharing my screen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then I guess if y'all still need to go back and talk with your colleagues, I think we can go through these today. And then you'll have a smaller list of things to ask people about, because I know this list is kind of daunting. There's a lot on here. So I guess if no one has anything else that they want to bring up, we can get started. All right. So, the first ticket we have here is to add OpenSearch to the user's app. So this is the same module that the inventory app uses for search. I'm actually not sure if any other apps have ended up implementing OpenSearch. But so the main benefits that we would get from this would be an accurate result count at the top of the user's search page. So currently, that count that displays is just an estimate, and it can be pretty far off. I think as long as there are more than 1,000 results, it is an estimate always. And so this would resolve that issue. And then it also would make searching faster, and I believe would also allow us to implement what do they call it in inventory? I think it's advanced search, which can get a little more into the weeds of what you can search for. Go over to inventory for a second. Yeah, so advanced search can give a little more detail, and I believe there are more fields here as options than there are for the normal search. Yeah, so there are some additional fields that you can search by with advanced search. Yeah, so I think at least for us at the five colleges, this isn't really a priority for us. Right now, the user search works for everything that we need. And in cases where we need more specific details, usually we'll use reports in our LB Lite database instead of searching in the app. So for the five colleges, I don't think we need to vote on this, but other folks, do you have any questions about this, or do you think that you'll be voting on it? Oh, and hi, Mara. We just
Hello,
got
Amelia.
started a little bit.
I think for us at Mobius, as we're an ECS site with large numbers of users, we definitely vote on this because we do need accurate counts, and some of our libraries do have several thousand users, and I think this would be a big benefit.
Great. Yeah, and if you can add your vote, I think when there are no votes on the ticket, you have to go into the ellipsis here. But once there's at least one vote, I think a thumb shows up here and you can just click that.
Could you post the link in the chat?
Oh, yes. Let me rearrange some of my Zoom windows quickly. Okay, there we go. Yeah, so any questions on this from anyone else before we move to the next one?
Go.
I'm good, and I just voted.
All right, great. So next up, this has been bouncing around for a long time. The ability to limit access to certain parts of a user record. I think we would need to do a lot of refinement on this to figure out an implementation approach that would work. I think that the actual implementation of this may be complicated, but I think it's still important to know if it is a priority so we can get into that work. So this would essentially allow an option to protect some fields from view by most staff. And so they would only be available for staff with an additional permission to view sensitive user data. And so I think this has not been updated in a long time. So it'll probably need a lot of work done to
I am
it.
in favor of this one.
But yeah, I think this one's pretty important in the long term.
Yeah, our libraries have asked for something similar in the past, mainly for like student workers, so they only see the checkout information, not the full information on the patron, for privacy and other reasons. Mainly you try to see the implementation, the limits. What's acceptable in one library may not be for another. I would say we can probably still go ahead and vote in this one as well.
Yeah, I think I will. I'm going to add a vote for the five colleges as well. Because I think we'd need to at least locally discuss more about how we would use this, but I'm fairly certain that this is something that we will want, especially Right now, we don't keep our address or phone number information for our users in the system. But if we did start including that again, yeah, we would want to separate out this information so students can't just look up someone's address.
Right. Early on, I called that stalker permissions.
Yeah. All right. And I put the link in the chat, so anyone who wants to vote now can do that. Okay. So this one. Okay, this would be adding. So currently, go to users, make some search. There are columns that show up in the search results pane, and you can remove columns, but there aren't any additional options to include. And so this would, it looks like there's a list of specific fields, but we could talk about this more in refinement, about what we really want to include here. But so this would just add a little more. I think it's helpful if you're looking at a longer list of users and need to just see some information at a glance. Yeah, and this is also, I think this was put in before we were really talking about this, but this I could see also being a potential candidate for a user preferences feature to allow folks to set like their own default of these are the things I want to see whenever I search users by default. So I think if we do work on this, that's also something we can look at, whether we want to have that as a something that can be individualized per user. Yeah, because there's been some more work done on those kinds of user preferences lately. So I think this would be a good candidate for that. All right, and let me put the link in the chat. Then, does anyone have any other questions on this before I move on? Any comments? Let's see when this was last touched.
I have a quick question, Amelia. So you're just paging through the gap list. Is that just to kind of zoom out on what we're doing today? Are we
Yeah.
just working through the gap list and giving status updates?
Yeah, I
Okay.
think my goal is to give like a more a smaller list of features for folks to go ask if they're a priority. Because I think having a list of nearly 50 features is it's kind of hard to pick like, oh, are we going to ask about this? And,
Is. Well, thank you. I just want to make sure I got the context right for the notes. Thank you.
so, no other questions. We can go to the next thing. Okay, so this one it came up a little more recently. But so, right now, when there are custom fields in users, so go custom fields. So there's a multi-select here. If I add a text area, field as well, and then add something to that field. So for non-text fields, non-free text fields, there are filters that appear on the side when those custom fields are created. To search free text fields, you have to search under keyword. There aren't, it doesn't add to this list of search options. And so it's just crammed into that keyword search. So this feature would break that out. And so in addition, I think when we talked about this before, we wanted this in addition to including it in the keyword search, because there are some institutions that use their text-based custom fields as a barcode stand-in. And so they still want it to in be included in the keyword filter. But this would also give us an option to select, like test would appear in this list, and you could search just by the data in those fields.
Yes, that's great.
Yeah, I think this could be really useful. I think if we are looking at open search, this might be something that we want to wait until after open search is implemented. Yeah, either way, if folks are interested in this, definitely vote on it, and we can talk more once we've got votes in. We can talk more about if this is a higher priority than getting open search in, or if we want to get open search done and then start looking at other search enhancements. And I put that in the chat. Yes. Great. So next, this one is an interesting one, creating templates to apply to user records. So I think the idea here is to have something similar to the way Orders implements templates. So here, essentially, when you're creating the template, you are editing what looks very similar to the orders edit page, and so you can set information that you want included, and then this template information actually accordion at the top. This is just settings for the template. So when you're editing the order, you can select the template name from the dropdown, and then it will apply the values in the fields down below to the order that you're creating or editing. They also, in Orders, have implemented this option to hide fields. And I think, I don't know if that's included in this. Interesting. Yeah, I think if we were to implement this, instead of having this tied to patron groups, we would probably do what Orders did, and allow you to change visibility as part of the template itself, and not based on patron group. But
So,
yeah, I
Amelia,
think.
does that mean that, for instance, if we look at this PO information thing where where orders has, a prefix and a suffix, and they can be visible or invisible, oh, this is the I'm sorry, this is the template itself rather than
Yes.
the record. Sorry.
Yeah, so when you edit the template and set it to not visible, when I select the template, you can see that the prefix and postfix fields just aren't displayed here. And I think like on the back end, the field still exists, but it just doesn't get displayed here.
Yes, I think it's very useful in the user app, because not every field has to be filled in, and so there won't be misfilling.
Yeah. And I
Yes.
think, I don't know if there's a ticket for this, but I also think even if we don't end up implementing templates, it could still be very useful to implement the option to hide certain users' fields.
With
Because
the
I know like
template.
or oh, go ahead, Scott.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Will the template still be used with API patron loads? We do most of our patron loading through that. And so if they want to have a custom display of their records or hide fields, they're still present and we load them, that's fine. It's just we'd have to make a lot of customization changes if, for instance, several fields should never display, never be populated.
Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah. So I guess if you were doing it with the user load, I suppose if we did that, we could include the template option in the data that you send in through the user load in that JSON. And then it would use that to determine the template and thus how it hides things.
That could be usable. Alternately, may not use the template at all and just look at the fields. And we just have to make sure we're respecting the fields that are there. So the template, I'm assuming, would be for all patrons. We load by the API. And it would either be in fields that would normally be suppressed or not showing. Because I think the API record creation is different from creating a user within the system.
With the using the mod user import endpoint, it is different. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really interesting question, with how this would interact with the user loads that way. Yeah, I suppose it's something that we'd want to talk about more. Oh, Olga.
Wouldn't user load just not use templates? Because the whole idea for templates is to help a human being to know like what fields to fill out and what not to. So for the user load, it's a machine, it doesn't need any help.
That's
That's a good point.
Yeah. I think if I was understanding Scott's question, it was more about like if we implement templates as a way to hide certain fields, if you're loading users and want to still make sure those fields are hidden, how that would work. But yeah, I guess another option would be to implement separately a like system-wide setting of fields to hide,
Yes, I think that
and
would
then the
be,
load could use that.
yeah,
Yeah, that
because
was.
sorry.
I'm
Sorry.
sorry. That was what I was thinking of, and a system-wide setting would work better. We load the field regardless by the API, and it's suppressed in the view until it's turned on or off.
I could have sworn we had a standalone ticket for this.
There was a ticket called, I think, Preferences or something like that. And I thought that that might be the ticket that all things like that, including having hiding some fields permanently.
On use of preferences, so like would that be a user preference? Is that what you're thinking?
That was my understanding, that that would be institution preference, like for example, always hide middle name.
Okay.
Yeah. Or proxy, the proxy fields.
Yes.
Yeah, each institution could choose whatever fields they want to hide, whichever they never use.
Yeah. So this would be the tenant level. And then this is for multiple apps. There isn't a users feature for this, but I think it would make sense if we want to do this. Can build something off of this. Yeah, this looks like what we'd be looking for. Okay. I'm gonna make a note about this to look into it a little more for myself. And I'll create a user's ticket under this. And then, yeah, I'll create that, make sure it ends up on the gap list. I can message in Slack also in the UMSIG channel once that's done, so that everyone can find it and vote on it.
Excellent.
Okay. So I think I'm going to vote on this because there are cases where we do create our users manually, and I think this would be useful. And yeah, I will share out that other feature once it's created. Great. All right, that's the end of what I had opened up ahead of time. But there are plenty more features that we can look through. And now some of the things in this list have already started work. I know version history is going to be worked on soon. And that'll be done by the Leipzig team. So I don't think that needs to be prioritized. Let's see. API should prevent committing invalid data. Oh, okay. Yes, this is. Yeah, I'm not sure if this might be more of a bug. I'll have to talk with Magda about this. This is currently the bulk edit app is able to set a record to be, I believe it's that you can set a record to be active with an expiration date in the past. Which shouldn't be possible. Which, yeah, I think this probably should be a bug. Or actually, it was a bug and I closed it because it is self-correcting after a day. Yeah. So I'll talk with Magda more about this. Option to remove forgot username and forgot password links from the login page. So, because some folks are using SSO, having the password reset on the login screen has been confusing for folks because you would need to reset your password through the single sign-on and not through Folio. So I think this makes sense to me. At least at the five colleges, we're not using SSO, so I'm not going to be voting for it, but I can understand why this would be
Yes,
something.
especially that there will be a checkbox to set the option or not. This is fine. The tenant specific option. Yeah.
So I'll throw this in chat. Enable editing, new default new account, password reset, and username emails. Okay. So this is essentially adding an editor for the templates for these default messages. So currently, all of these email templates are fixed. And so you can't add information specific to your institution. And so looks like, yeah, this would be under tenant settings. And I assume we'd use a similar system to how all of our other notice templates are working, to allow you to customize these some. This is an interesting one.
It looks like an important thing to have, but we'd have to really, I think, spec it out a lot.
Yeah, I know some libraries would like to have links to their website or specific site in this email.
And this
Yeah.
is, sorry, I keep interrupting. I'm sorry.
You're good. Go ahead.
This would be helpful for our libraries as well with our ECS migration. Sometimes the messages about how to reset their password have not been consistent. And if we could edit that directly, that'd be a big benefit for us.
Yeah. I think also for us, it would be great to be able to add our system help email to the messages for these for when folks run into issues, because people don't always actually put tickets in. They just email me directly. And yeah, could be nice. Did I put this one in the chat yet? 43, yes.
Yes.
Amelia, yeah, I would like to echo what Scott said. We had an aborted Sunflower upgrade in part because people couldn't get logged in. The messaging wasn't consistent when they tried to reset their password, and it was an absolute dumpster fire of an upgrade attempt. So, yes, this is very, very important.
Yeah, I know. I think it came with when we implemented refresh token rotation, the expiration time on the password reset email went from 24 hours to 10 minutes, and the message did not change. And a lot of folks had issues with that initially. Don't actually know. I think we updated the email template for that, but need to we'll check that. Because I can't remember if that was something we had our host change on the back end or if it was a change that we made to Folio itself.
Well, Scott and I have lived through the trauma. I see Aaron's comment. We were unaware that in our ECS environment that if as sort of systems people, if Scott and I had accounts with affiliated with our work email in more than one tenant, that was a tripwire. If you had a phone number in your staff account in more than one tenant, that was a problem too. There were a lot of things we weren't aware of because when people would go to request their pass, and so for example, there might be somebody at a particular library who has their own account, but also they're getting all the emails for sort of generic staff logins. And when they would go to reset their password, the system would say, "Yes, check your email. I've sent you the password reset," but the system wouldn't actually send it because it didn't know to whom it should send it to. And so it was, yeah, it's it there were a lot of unknown unknowns. And now we have the known, they're known. So yes, to sound like Donald Rumsfeld, which is terrible. But yeah, it was, Scott, I don't know if you want to add on to that,
You
but
have a
it was
known
bad.
unknown now.
It was a known unknown. It was terrible. Go,
We
Scott.
also had problems with some of our users that changed their username, but didn't reflect in their shadow tenant, or sorry, shadow account. So those didn't update properly. The big out on this is in the developer mode, you can go into has password, manually set a password. And we'll probably use that for what we call our site coordinators, people manage each tenant. Aaron, are you on a single site or ECS site?
Oh, I'm single.
Okay, that will probably be better for you because you may not have what we have, multiple accounts and multiple shadow accounts. But if you are able to access the developer mode or entry where there's the has password setting and you can set passwords if people can't log in, that's the big fix if you're not able to get emails by get their password reset email. And they are working reliably if it's single address, but if you have multiple addresses, multiple accounts, that's where the problem is. And looking at what Lola just posted, yeah, that's correct.
Okay, yeah. So it doesn't specify a time. It just says short time.
Yeah, and we did tell all of our staff in the email that went out that it is a 10-minute window, but for us, that link, it's really tiny in there, but I think where it says request new link or something like that doesn't work. It doesn't go anywhere. It does a 404 forbidden error or something. So we've got that issue going on too.
I would check how your SMTP is set up. That could be a problem there. 404 is, let me look that up really quick and see what that means. Used to have always memorized.
I think it
404
was
is
404. I'll
the
have to look
dreaded
that up.
404.
You
Invalid.
mean the page you were connecting to was not found?
Yeah.
Yes. Wow. I mean, I
Yeah.
would, 403 forbidden, I would understand a little better.
Hang on, I'm trying to remember. I didn't do the testing yesterday, but one of my staff did and emailed it to me.
And what release are you on? I'm going to make a note on that
We're
this time.
going to Sunflower tonight at 10 p.m.
Okay.
404, yeah, 404 forbidden page.
404 shouldn't be forbidden. That.
404
404
error.
is just not found. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Good.
not found. She wrote forbidden. I just clicked on it. It's not found.
Right. 403 is forbidden.
I would check with EBSCO then, make sure that they got the configuration set right. Sounds like it's not finding the link to go to. that was working for us. The problem was which email it went to, and now we've cleaned that up so that we have single e email addresses for everyone. I posted a screenshot where I was talking about this is where you go into developer password, has password, and therefore you can manually set a password for people, and that can help to log in, a lot of the users, get a lot of things taken care of if they're not getting the reset links.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, in the chat, Lola also said that she gets a 404 error.
I do. Yeah, this is for Notre Dame. I'm working with them right now, and I hadn't noticed that, but sure enough, that request a new link goes to a 404. I can't quite figure out why. Looking at it right now, it looks like the syntax is good. So anyway, side
Yeah,
quest.
we've
Yeah.
got a tick. We've got a ticket, and we're hosted by EBSCO, but I don't think it's going to be fixed by the time we're supposed to start going live tonight. So it'll
Hey,
be messy.
Aaron, what
Yeah.
is your institution? I want to look into that. What?
Michigan State
Michigan
University.
State. Okay, I want to find that ticket, and because yeah, you're not the only one. Thank you.
So requesting the new password gives a 404.
And I also posted for your admin, for your managers, have your user login set to use just the FolioAdmin admin permission set, unless it's something really specific you do need, because that will post Sunflower give you access to all the functions you need.
And if you do end up needing to use that developer password function, if you make sure, oh, I don't remember what the specific permission is, but there is a permission to allow for the in-app change password option. So once you manually reset their password, then they can go in and set a fresh one themselves without needing to go through the email.
Oh, nice.
So I know we've had to do this when our email server has had issues in the past. So yeah. Great.
We're sorry, we didn't mean to pass our trauma on to all of you, but
No, you're warning us of future trauma. You're allowing us to learn from your trauma.
days of future trauma past, yes.
I already am just like, oh, not looking forward to tomorrow. We're supposed to be off until about 1 o'clock, PM tomorrow. So I'm just dreading tomorrow afternoon and like everything. Oh.
It will be difficult, but you can do it, Aaron.
Done it before, we'll do it again.
Yes, exactly. You're smarter than the system.
Right. Let's see, where were we?
What about the repeatable email field? It's on the bottom, 2488.
So, oh wow, this is very bare bones.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is this like in case one bounces back, you have another one? You know, like if you send a notice to the primary email address and it bounces back, you have a secondary email address to send the notice to.
Well, actually, in our previous system, we had two emails, and we loaded from both the private and the college email because students don't check college email. So we can email them notices as much as we want. They just don't get them because they don't go there. And ask them to forward those messages, but you know, they don't care. So it worked pretty well when we were sending to both emails, but now we can send only to college email. And it would help if there would, if you would be able to add two emails.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, that makes
I'm
sense.
glad to see that some things never change.
Yeah.
You get your email address specifically for communications from the college, and they never use
Yep.
it.
All right. Yeah, well, oh, let me get a link in the chat. But yeah, go ahead and add your votes here. And we can talk about it more in the future and get this filled out with some more detail. Interesting. Okay. So this seems like, sort of something similar to the, I guess,
Acquisition teams.
acquisitions, acquisitions unit, which, that's interesting. It almost seems like if we wanted to add something like this, it would be more useful if we didn't need to maintain these teams separately, like between acquisitions and users. But yeah, I'm not sure. Is this something that is a priority for anyone, just off the top of your head?
Well, I think for our libraries it's nice to have, but not high priority.
Yeah, I we at the five colleges, I think we'd need to talk about this more. So far, we kind of just have a handshake agreements to not look too closely at each other's user records. But yeah, this is an interesting one. I think especially protecting from certain actions or visibility, I think could be useful. I could see potential issues since we have loaning outside of each institution. Like, what does that look like when a user is checking out a book from one college and the user is from another? And then you're looking at the item from your college, but you can't see who it was checked out to. Like, I could see some issues there, at least for us, but yeah.
I'm not as sure if this would be useful for us in ECS, really, unless you had the affiliation set. You can't look at another library's users, so it'd only be within that particular tenant or us, the administrative level. But I do see it could be useful for other libraries.
Yeah, I think really like ECS kind of covers this in a lot of ways, right? Because you are separating your users for
Yeah.
the most part.
One of our related institutions, University of Missouri, does have four campuses, one server. I could see a use for that to try and segregate their patron records that way. And there's another, and it may be also useful for one institution, multiple campuses, reach camp, I'm sorry, each branch as opposed to a campus. And they made a distinction for each branch to be separate. I definitely see it being useful for multiple campuses where they may be actually operating as autonomous entities, but on the same server.
And that's what we have at the five colleges, is we're on a single tenant, but with five institutions. So yeah, I think this is something we probably want to discuss locally first.
Okay.
Yeah, I put it in the chat. So if there's anyone who does see it as useful, go ahead and add your vote. Bye, Maura. I guess we can look at one more. Preform full name or display name text fields. Okay, so this would be potentially an alternative to the individual, like first name, last name, middle name fields. Interesting. I could see the implementation of this being fairly complicated, but if it is a priority for anyone. Is there anyone who thinks that this would be useful for your institution?
Not us.
I think they would try to accommodate users may have unique names, but it would also create more problems trying to make it work with the system. Could you scroll back up just a little bit? The optional preferred name field has come up before with some of our libraries. And the part about the patronymic naming system, we have run into that too for particular countries, I think like Korea and China, maybe examples of that. But I think it would take some more work to decide both how to make it work with the system, but also how it would work with different with different library systems, like trying to remember which one that we have is mostly the output we get from the bursar's office. So mainly, if the format from the bursar's office can work, how will it work with InFolio? I do see a reporter on this as Brooks, and so I'll go ahead and vote for that.
And I did put it in the chat. Yes. Oh. The number is different here than. Why does that they say 3680? Okay, well, it should be 3610. Strange. Okay, yeah. And then yes, one last one for the road. Yes, this one's pretty similar. Just a full address field instead of having a whole bunch of individual fields for addresses. Yeah, this one's
This
also from Brooks.
I'm not sure if it would be useful because a lot of the outputs we get do have individual fields, and it would be helpful sometimes with the data we get to be able to update like the city or a zip code. If it's free form, that would help, especially for like some international libraries. either don't follow the same standards we do, but I think for our particular case it wouldn't be very useful.
I think we're probably in the same place at the five colleges. It's not something that we've really come up too much for us, because all of the data we get from central IT is already broken up by those fields. And yeah. All right. Oh, Olga.
I know we're almost done, but I was wondering if I could ask a quick question. Is there a feature like that? I was just asked recently again about it. When you check in records, when you check in items, you don't see anything about a person. And I guess it was done by design, but our staff wants to see, like, if there are other, if there are finds in addition, like previous finds, not just find for this item, if there are other books or videos. So is there a ticket like that, or should I open a ticket and ask for it, or not ask for it? Like, what's your advice?
I
Think I
I
saw one in the list of in the gap list.
yeah, I did. I couldn't find, not check out, but at check in. There was one at checkout.
Okay. Something with pop check in.
Yeah, pop up
And a
notice.
notes pop up with check, yeah.
Yeah, but that is not notice. It's just kind of fields to be displayed, finds or loans.
Okay. I don't know if I've seen a ticket for that.
If anyone else is interested in that, or is it just us?
No, it's would be very nice to see that this user, this patron has open loans and fees and fines.
Yeah, because
So
sometimes we want to follow up on those issues with people. If you have a person in front of you, of course, it's different when you just put items through the bin from the bin. But when you have people, you want to communicate with
Yes,
them.
I can tell them, please pay for pay your fine.
Or you have a block and you need to book so we can unblock you.
Yeah.
Warn about this.
I think maybe ask in the RA SIG channel. So I think this would probably fall under that group.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Because it sounds like something that there would be a ticket open for already. So yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't find, but maybe I was just not looking great. Okay, will do. Thank you.
And thanks everybody. This was a good discussion.
Thanks. We'll see you
Thank
later.
you. Okay. Have a good
Yes,
day.
thank you.
Bye.
Yeah. Thank you, Aaron.